Save big this summer with great deals. All in the Kroger app.
Get select varieties of Powerade or Body Armor Super Drinks for 79 cents each. Then get a 2-pound package of strawberries for $2.99 each, all with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun.
A surprise.
I'm Brendan.
A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I and a guest
go through
every single episode of The Sopranos
and talk about it.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening. 5 stars and a review. You know what to do. That would be great. We've gotten a lot of good reviews and they're fun. And I've appreciated them, except for one guy who said we are hit or miss, which...
It's fair, sure.
I mean, isn't every podcast hit or miss?
Better than being miss or miss, I guess, you know?
I mean, for sure better than that, but I feel like I would like to know the ratio. But he gave us 5 stars, so I assume it's a good ratio.
Yeah.
Also, Charlie Penner and Jason are still donating at the highest $100 level. Unbelievable dicks that they have, and I would put them in my mouth and my butt at the same time to be a rotisserie chicken.
Wow. Okay. I don't think that's how chickens work, but all right.
I'm pretty sure that's how chickens work. And also,
he also appreciates the donations.
I do. I appreciate the donations, and I thank you for it. Although no one took my advice, from last week, in which I said, if all 900 people gave us $1,000, then we would have $900,000. And I feel like that is, that still stands. So if you want to real quick make us into a collective almost millionaire, $1,000, that would be.
Yep. Consider it.
Think about it. All right. Enough of that. Today, we are going to be talking about, from season 6B of The Sopranos, episode 2, we are talking stage 5. And our guest today, you've heard him a couple of times on, you know, just now. You heard him on Pod Yourself a Gun. And you, of course, know him from the Film Drunk Fraudcast, future Hall of Famer and human giant, Brendan is here.
What are we doing here? Like, what was that intro? Like, this is weird.
This is.
I feel like I came home to the house I grew up in, and all the furniture is different. Or it's like a weird dream where you're at your school, but it's not really your school.
This is. It's like in Wayne's World 2 or Wayne's World 1, the one where they sold out, and then they had a guy singing the Wayne's World theme song.
Oh no, that's the first one. Yeah.
Friday.
It's like both. Mm. But this is what we do. This is professionalism, Brendan. Times have changed. You know, we've done 6 seasons of this podcast.
Look, the market has gotten lean and we've had to tighten up to compete.
Yes.
I fucking hate it.
I just feel like it's like that was the one thing that the broadcast is missing is like a little bit of structure in our lives, right?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the good news is that the source material that you base the podcast off will just continue providing you with things to make shows about. So this could really just go on indefinitely, right?
Never ending. Yeah. It's going to keep going forever.
Yeah.
It's going to live forever, just like my dog.
I love that for you.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. We could always just rewatch The Sopranos again, and then
think of how much deeper the analysis would be the second time.
Yeah, think of like how much more art we could suss out.
Yeah, we could see all the art, everything that they put in there.
Yeah, every piece of, because you can't get it all on the first viewing.
No,
but we're probably not going to just rewatch The Sopranos again, although that would be very funny. But we are fans of The Sopranos, Brendan. quick interview. Do you like The Sopranos?
I love it.
Sick. What do you like about it?
I like the Carl Jungs about it. It's extremely Carl Jung.
I like Carl Jung.
The exploration of the subconscious cannolis.
What does it mean? The symbol, it's symbolism. Yeah,
And the gigantic gabagool that your mom holds while you're naked and also punching a Vietnamese guy in the stomach to make him
give you the money.
Money.
Yeah. I like all that stuff too. That's usually what I say. And it's what most critics say when they review the series.
From what I understand, they agree across the board.
Across the board that they like the giant gabagool and the punching of various ethnic groups, immigrant groups specifically, in order to get money for more gabagool.
Yeah, it's true.
So what else is going on with you? How's life?
it's so good, man.
Great segue.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
There's so many kids running around here. It's awesome. They're mine. So.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. Yeah. Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Shit. Vince, you got anything?
Are you doing like an open mic set here? What's happening?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just crowd work.
Yeah. Where are you from? Oh, okay.
Hey, Brent, you got your girlfriend here with you?
All right, fine. You know what? This isn't a podcast about people's kids or parenting. No, this is a Sopranos podcast, and we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today we're going to be talking about from season 6B of The Sopranos, episode 2. The episode is called Stage 5, and it premiered on April 15th, 2007. Vince, break us off a little piece of that IMDb.com synopsis.
Johnny Sack finds out he only has 3 months to live. Meanwhile, Cleaver premieres and is a hit, while Carmela has mixed emotions about it, saying too much of it is based on Tony.
Yep.
Did you spell Johnny Sack without the K, or was that IMDb?
That's IMDb.
Okay. Because that makes him sound like a weird, like Johnny Sack. It feels very medical.
Like he's an embryo.
Yeah, exactly.
The Johnny Sack?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to inseminate the Johnny Sack in order for the baby to come out.
Yeah.
That's how babies work.
He got that nickname because he's always gestating over here.
Hey, I got Fluter surrounding me. Hey, give me a break.
Vince, what was happening at the time that
I'm
this
drinking
episode...
an oxygen-rich liquid in my lungs over here?
Hey, placenta. I don't know, man. How do babies work? You guys seem to know.
Well, sorry, what was your question?
I was going to ask... like what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
Oh, right, Matt. I think what you mean to say is that we cannot evaluate art bereft of its cultural context. We have to do it in the context in which it was released. And to add some of that context back in, we go to the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk, daddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember then.
Remember. Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
It's a, that is, It is. It's like a sting. It's a bumper, you know, like in professional. You know, life can't just be sitting around getting drunk, talking about dicks with your friends without a little bit of structure, Brendan.
I guess it's kind of like Crystal Corner.
Yeah.
It's like Crystal Corner.
A lot like
exactly.
Crystal Corner, except with less original recipe for Loco.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Yeah, we're going all the way back to April 15th, 2007 for this episode. A lot of things going on in the news. I mean, for one thing, Don Ho died at the age of 76.
Who's Don Ho?
He was a legendary crooner known for his raspberry tinted sunglasses and signature tune, Tiny Bubbles.
Tiny Bubbles.
That's right.
Oh, he's Tiny Bubbles?
He's Tiny Bubbles.
He was.
He's,
he was Tiny Bubbles.
He's the yeah. king of Hawaii, I think.
Those bubbles have been popped. Don Ho is his name?
Don Ho.
That's a weird name.
He's the King Ho.
He sounds like the, yeah, exactly. He's the king of the Ho Mafia.
Mm.
It's just him and a bunch of other hoes, but he's the head ho.
Mm. Elsewhere, Al Franken pulled in $1.3.5 million from scores of actors, writers, producers, and others from the entertainment industry who all have contributed to Franken's Senate campaign, helping the Minnesota Democrat get off to a strong fundraising start.
Mm.
Dang, he brought in 2 decimals.
Yeah. Look, I hope it goes well. I think he's going to be a good senator who will continue to serve for this day.
Till this day.
Other news, people that created the internet are coming together. They're saying that the internet might have been a bad idea.
Oh, shit.
The idea may seem unthinkable, even absurd, but many believe a clean slate approach is the only way to truly address security, mobility, and other challenges that have cropped up since Professor Leon Kleinrock helped supervise the blah, blah, blah. He's the inventor of the internet. Blah, blah, blah.
The inventor of the internet, his name was Kleinrock?
Leonard Kleinrock from UCLA.
Nice.
We need to send a Terminator back in time to kill him. Like the
Skylab guy. That's right. That's right.
Miles, what's his name?
Yeah, yeah.
The internet works well in
Mr.
many
situations. There's too many posts. I have to kill you.
Yeah.
Stop all the
People
posting.
People keep harassing me. People are too...
Without the opinions, they're terrible.
You are canceled. In order to stop cancel culture, I have to cancel the man who made the internet. That would be amazing.
This is a DDoS attack.
This is a blue screen of death.
The internet, quote, works well in many situations, but was designed for completely different assumptions. It is sort of a miracle that it continues to work well today. So, yeah.
That's
citation needed.
Citation, yeah. Very much so needed. I mean, at this point, Facebook was around, but it hadn't yet, like, turned, I don't know.
Your weird aunt wasn't on it, like, in all your
yeah,
posts.
Yeah, exactly,
sharing fucking
it
the
hadn't,
worst
It
memes.
Hadn't radicalized the olds yet.
Yeah.
It was merely radicalizing the young, and they weren't really doing anything with it. Like, early internet was okay,
I
but
mean, we
you
were
can't
just being
go back
radical.
To that.
We weren't, like, being assholes. We were just getting radical with it.
Yeah, like the memes were radical.
Yeah.
I mean, like, all the cats were saying cute shit and all the titties were
hanging
just...
out in ceilings.
Yeah.
There was cats. There was a dog who had a phone and he was like, yes, this is dog. And we dined out on that shit for like
loved it.
Five, 6 years.
Everyone had 2 jokes and it was either zombies or pirates and, you know,
or
people
bacon.
Were like, or bacon. Yeah. Epic bacon. I mean, shit
epic
was like.
Bacon.
Shit was great.
People like
it's funny because in 2007, people are like, I don't know, this could lead to a problem. But at that time, I was like, nah, man, good times will roll forever.
Yeah, this seems great. What are you talking about? We got cats eating cheeseburgers.
Yeah, do you remember being like, my privacy, my data? Who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit? Here's where I am. Come find me. And now...
can't get laid if the people don't know where I am.
Yeah, and now... Brett is literally underground in a bunker.
Yeah. Other news. This is a big story. Royal love affair is pfft. That's the headline.
Pfft. Spelled
P-F-F-F-T.
Okay.
London. Many saw her as Britain's future queen, but it looks like Kate Middleton's royal romance will not have a fairy tale ending. Middleton and Prince William have ended their 4-year relationship, A decision that surprised palace watchers and disappointed monarchists hoping for a glamorous royal wedding to rival that of Princess Diana and Prince Charles. For many Britons, however, the split provided more evidence that the royals are as human as anyone else.
I think more evidence than what, dying in a car accident?
Sure.
I feel like there's a lot of evidence there.
Yeah.
Being associated with Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Actually, that's probably evidence to the contrary.
But I think they're just like any other couple, said Manette Marshall, a 36-year-old London office worker. They're young, and before you meet the right person, you have to kiss a lot of frogs. Anyway, yeah. I'm sure they'll never get back together.
I love that there were like disappointing monarchists. I'm like, were there monarchists?
Yeah.
What do they mean by monarchists? Because when I think of a monarchist, I mean someone who wants the monarchy back.
Well, the goddamn Bourbons and the Habsburgs, like they're
right. Exactly.
They've really been cheerleading this.
Yeah.
The House of Saxe-Coburg shall rise again.
Mm-hmm. wrapping up the Remember When machine. Top movies in the country: Disturbia. Mm-hmm. Blades of Glory, Meet the Robinsons, Perfect Stranger, and Are We Done Yet? Disturbia, mm-hmm. Of course, that is the one that gave us Shia LaBeouf. And also, the director went on to direct that weird movie about the apples for Ben Shapiro, Shut In.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Top pop song, it was Give It To Me by Timbaland, featuring Nelly Furtado and Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
And
I sort of remember that.
Yeah. Nelly Furtado. I used to call her that. I thought it was real funny.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. That. Yeah. Top rock song is Breath by Breaking Benjamin, which we covered last week. Not a great song. Barely remembered it.
All right. So that was what was going on at the time that this episode came out. Very important for us to get that cultural context out of the way. And now to...
It's really important that we have an understanding of Breaking Benjamin to analyze this episode.
It's true. Well, look, you had to know that Breaking Benjamin was breaking right in the middle of when this episode came out.
Yeah, people need to know that Disturbia was coming out at the same time as Cleaver, you know?
That's right.
So that's important to know. As Vince said... you know, this episode is about all the things. Johnny Sack finds out he only has 3 months to live, and then Cleaver premieres, and Carmela's got mixed emotions. But I have my own fucking, you know, synopsis.
Go on.
I'm going to play a little bit.
I bet we're going to hear it.
Yeah. You make me feel like a fool! But yeah, here's a little bit.
I think we'll go a little something like this.
I maybe shouldn't have played the whole intro.
Uh-oh. I don't even know if I know this song.
It's Linger by Cranberries.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it's Cleaver.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yo, what up, bitch? My name is Ellie Mack. Rap in the ass with a gap. What if I rapped earlier in the song and then everyone could suck my gabagool? Christopher returns. Johnny Sack learns. He's gonna pass away. Blanca starts being rude, has a shitty attitude. It tears AJ apart. It's ruining his Sunday dinner. Silvio and the hairdo, they eat some gabagool. Jerry gets shot right in his head. Doc wanted Jerry dead. Now there's gonna be a war. That's a spicy meat the ball. Season 6 BO2. Christopher made a film for you. And now it's wrapped and there's a screening. Chrissy's horror film called Cleaver. Chrissy's horror.
that's all right. That's the song. It has all of the things that happen in the episode, and of course, you can listen to the rest of it at the end of the episode.
That was delightful. You should do more cranberry songs.
Cranberries are so fucking good. Like, yeah. They're just, I think they're the most underrated band of the 90s.
I mean, and it's a good name because their music is crisp and refreshing and a little bit tart, just like a nice glass of cranberry juice.
I love cranberry juice. That's, you know, as someone who doesn't drink anymore, I drink a lot of cranberry juice.
Mm.
You know, it's too much sugar in it, though. All right, well, we're getting off topic. Let's get into this episode. What did we think of Stage 5? Vince, what are your thoughts?
You know, look, I think it had a lot of great elements of it. I don't know that it's like one of my favorite episodes. There's some parts that I thought dragged a little and maybe weren't that great. But I love the AJ storyline.
Yeah.
Anytime you can get JT Dolan in there some more, I'm a big fan of. And Lil Carmine is better than he ever was before. I feel like this is like peak Lil Carmine.
Totally agree.
Him becoming a Hollywood dude was pretty excellent. But it's fine. It's like a, you know, it's a good bridge episode, I'd say.
Sure. Brendan, did you like this episode?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I feel like anytime you can get like a Lil Carmine in a position where he's got to speak publicly, like you've got a rich vein to tap there. And so like, that's when you get like the sacred and the propane.
alternate title really of the good. Episode, by the way.
That was next on my notes app. Was bullshit that they didn't call this episode the sacred and the propane.
Yes.
I mean, it was actually pretty good. So I still have not watched any other Sopranos episodes since the last time you had me on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all
so
right.
The episode opened and I'm like, man, I don't remember them fucking a guy up that bad.
Yeah, you know, I had the same reaction. I was like, they usually don't show this kind of thing on The Sopranos.
Yeah. And then
it's a lot more bloody than I remember. Yeah, and is that guy undead? What the fuck?
Yeah. And God, that's so funny. That whole scene where they're all watching it. It's so good.
I think it's up there as one of my favorite Sopranos opening scenes. And I have a clip of it.
Welcome to the chop shop, Cugine. You can't kill me twice, Sally boy. I'm already fucking dead, remember?
I'm the boss, Michael. What you had belongs to me.
Even the girl I loved?
What's mine is mine. What's yours is mine.
This is mine too, Sally. Now you can have it. Far from me!
That's so perfect. The only thing that I think was missing was when it cut to them watching the cut.
Yeah.
If one of them was lip syncing the lines, that would
have been. Oh no, they were doing that. They were were they? Yeah, they were doing that.
The director was. Yeah. The director was.
I must have missed that. I think maybe I was watching Chris to see if he was doing it.
Yeah.
No, it's such a fucking funny scene because it's like they do, I think, like an excellent job recreating that type of filmmaking in a way that is like it's both like supposed to be silly, but also it's supposed to be like a real movie. So it's they don't make it cartoonishly bad. They make it just bad enough that it's plausible that this would be a movie that could get made.
Which
I appreciate.
And I like, just the process of the people that were involved in the movie, like getting to watch the first cut of it. Cause it's like a very specific thing. Cause like once you get to that point in making a movie, like you have no idea whether it's good or not. Like you are so like invested and you know, every syllable of the stupid thing that you have no distance from it. So like you're in that screening, you're just like, oh fuck yeah. Oh fuck yeah. We're finally fucking done. Yeah. And everybody's just kind of like,
meanwhile,
amped.
The money people are money people. So they're just like, sure. Yeah, this is great. Like they have no fucking concept of whether or not it's actually good.
And the director and Lil Carmine, are both like trying to think of ways to add more blood scenes, because they're just like, I think it would help sell the movie more if we could kill a couple more people, which is it feels not that far off from what it must be like to take like to look at your dailies with like a Blumhouse production.
Yeah, like, or it's yeah, people just like going, any, like,
is
any
there any way
person.
We could get her tits out when we stab her to death? Yeah. Like that feels correct.
Yeah, there's no one there that comes in with a personal opinion. I mean, they come in with a personal opinion, but it's always couched in like these are the comps for this movie. And
right.
This should be more like X, Y, and Z because X, Y, and Z made this much money.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they're constantly just like trying to squeeze art into different like rat holes that they know exist. And it's, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's they also the entire impetus for like making the movie other than like to feed, you know, Chrissy's need to be a Hollywood guy is because he thinks like making The Godfather meets Saw will be a huge blockbuster. Like he's convinced that alone will do it. So
this is a flaw in the market that this movie hasn't been made yet. And he's found an angle.
We found an angle and we finally get to see it come to fruition. And it's Chris's storyline is great in this episode just because you do get to see how much distance now exists between the Chrissy of the past and Chrissy now, who is like really he doesn't hang at the Bing anymore. And he's like he's just completely into the movie thing.
I like that they've sort of like they've turned into like the press tour version of themselves. And, yeah. You know, as someone who works on the other side of the press tour, the movie press tour, it's like this very specific thing where the movie hasn't come out yet, but you're like doing a bunch of interviews. And I feel like you're just sort of deputized to be the absolute most self-centered and like pedantic and expansive version of yourself. Like you're like everyone turns into Little Carmine a bit like during the press tour because he's a guy he's a guy that can just pontificate about anything and loves to speak in parables. But now like everyone in his orbit has become like a little bit more like Little Carmine, and Little Carmine has become you know, like Jim Carrey when he puts on the mask or something.
This is
it really actually, moves to the beat of jazz. It's sort of like a cosmic gumbo.
Yeah, exactly. I get the money anyways. I don't know, something like that. But yeah, fucking. This is an interesting episode for Little Carmine because he starts off doing the clown thing that he always does with the malapropisms and the fucking, you know, like. The speech that he gives that's funny, but it actually ends with him saying something smart. So it almost feels like it wraps Little Carmine in this nice like narrative bow for this series. But first we'll start with the scene. So it's the night of the premiere and everyone.
It's a cast and crew screening.
The cast and crew screening, jeez, including all of the New Jersey Mafia and some of the Brooklyn Mafia. And Little Carmine gives a little speech.
Much like a child, a film has many parents. That is to say, many individuals who act like parents, or that by aversion, the film is their baby. I, as an executive producer, am one of those individuals.
I mean, even though you know it's like a written character, you're always rooting for him to say something normal. And then when he says something dumb, you're just, I don't know. I'm happy that he gets a sentence out,
I feel like,
half of the time.
When they first introduced him, he was kind of gimmicky where I was like, all right, we get it. He like doesn't use the right word for stuff. But I feel like he's really grown into like the perfect parody of a corporate douchebag because like they really do talk
they all talk like
that
now.
It's, yeah.
Except for they're just using different buzzwords, but it's like if you fill it up with enough like tech jargon and like corporate just like corporate speak, then Little Carmine's basically doing the same thing. He's just doing it with more malapropisms.
Yeah, if Little Carmine was around now, it'd be like he'd be talking about NFTs.
He'd be Adam Newman.
Yeah,
serious.
There would be NFTs and the blockchain. I just read some interview of some person talking about how they're like putting their thing as an NFT, and you could tell she had no idea what she was actually talking about, but she was just using like the kinds of words that she's heard, where she's like, yeah, it's just gonna be like a totally new and blockchain and disruptive blockchain piece of experience. And I was like, okay, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
She's aped in. Why haven't you aped in?
Exactly. Why haven't
Brendan, have you aped in yet?
Yeah, my ape is so fucking bored on its boat. I can't even tell you.
You got the most bored ape. He's just like, I'm gonna fucking kill myself.
Mm-hmm. He's got one eye and he's so fucking bored. He's got one eye and a fedora and he's so fucking bored, dude.
He's super over it. He just has a thought bubble that says there's no one good here. And you know, he's just fucking tired of it.
I hate this fucking yacht. I hate this fedora. I hate being an ape.
I love that they're just depressed. They're like, oh, what if our apes were depressed?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
What if we made some characters that absolutely hated fucking being there?
Just hated existing, which is, I think that's, I don't know, that's seems like a pretty good metaphor for people who collect NFTs. But yeah, Lil Carmine gives a speech, and then we get to see a little bit more of the movie. And it's clear that while watching the movie that Danny Baldwin's boss character is like based on Tony. And you know, that's
how excited must Danny Baldwin have been to get to be in a fake
on
movie
the Sopranos.
In the Sopranos.
Yeah. I wonder if he was the first Baldwin they called up.
I mean,
did you think the other Baldwins wonder that whenever they get a job?
I mean, they definitely were not trying to get like Alec. Like Alec wouldn't
well,
work
right, of course
in
not.
Role, but they were like, but yeah, like, so we need to get one of the shitty Baldwins. I know.
Right, I know, but
Daniel.
How do you... Yeah,
which
but
of the
how
Baldwins
you,
are on the table right now?
Okay, so you
Billy,
got...
Steven.
You got Billy, he's the skinny one.
Right.
Steven, he's like the one who's like the weird albino Baldwin, who's also like a Christian.
He's born again Christian Baldwin.
Yeah. I think he's Justin Bieber's father-in-law or something like that.
Oh.
Nice. Right? Isn't that right?
I don't know which Baldwin
she is. Oh, yeah,
he's
married to a Baldwin. Yeah, yeah, I don't know how she fits into the Baldwin
puzzle.
And then you got Daniel. Daniel's like the Baldwin who's like kind of like Alex. He's the most Alec-y of the other Baldwins.
Who was the Biodome Baldwin?
That's Steven.
That's Steven.
Billy was in Sliver.
Oh, okay. All right.
The Biodome Baldwin was Pauly Shore Baldwin.
That's right. Who? And that's the same Baldwin who played Barney in the live action Flintstones.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember there was a time when I was like, this Baldwin is my favorite now. Because Steven? He came out with two. Yeah, because like Biodome and then the Flintstones live action. And I was like, this guy's going places. But
he had a minute there. Now he's in he's probably in a couple of the Sharknado movies now.
Yeah. But yeah, I do wonder like when any other Baldwin gets cast who's like not Alec, if they wonder like, do they call Danny? You know, like or like if like does Steven think, oh fuck, I bet they called Billy first. Or I wonder if there's like there's gotta be rules around that, because I would be offended, you know?
Mm.
Anyways, so they watch the movie, and I have a clip of just a little bit more cleaver action for us.
You don't know what? He's a fucking rat.
But we can't really prove it.
Oh, so you're gonna argue with me now?
Oh, it's just, I mean, he's practically like your own son.
I'm sorry, Sally. I think we ought to give him a pass.
I didn't ask you what you fucking think. Motherfucking son of a... Find where this Pet Navante is, and you bring him to the butcher shop. They're gonna find pieces of this kid all over fucking Canarsie.
Yeah.
The wedding's in 2 days.
Who? The Guatemalan? What time is he gonna be there?
I hate to say this, but the truth is he ain't good enough for you. I mean, he's a good kid. What you need is a man.
Tell him to put it in the trunk.
Paulie, watching a movie.
His ringtone being Cecilia is so funny. He's a Simon and Garfunkel guy.
Yeah, that was the most surprising moment, was that being his ringtone. Because he feels like the tone of his horn is the Godfather theme. So you'd figure most of his other ringtones would be some, but yeah.
They threw in one out of left field on this one.
Yeah, it's sort of it hit me while I was watching this episode what they do so well. Like it kind of crystallized where they're just so good at every episode is so good at giving you just these little windows and like Holly's ringtone being Cecilia.
And the guy whose phone not only rings during the movie that he doesn't silence it, but he picks it up and answers and talks on the phone during
the movie.
The Guatemalan.
Just him doing business in the middle of the movie theater while everyone is watching. It's just,
and he's the kind of guy that if you shushed him, he would be mad at you and be like whatever I got going on is way more important than this stupid movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's this is not a Polly episode, but the scenes that have him in it are some of my favorite Polly content.
He can't help but steal the show.
He can't help but steal the show. At the very end of the episode, after you find out that Johnny Sack succumbs to cancer, they give a little toast, and Polly just says this.
I beat cancer, but I took him out. Ride the painted pony, let the spinner wheel glide.
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
No idea.
I haven't heard that one, but I like it.
I love it. It sounds right. Like I can't dispute whether or not that's an actual fucking saying.
He's right.
He is right. I bet he's right. You know, you ride the painted pony and you let the spinning wheel glide or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure.
Remember there's that episode of The Simpsons where I can't remember what happens, but somehow I don't know, buildings are being destroyed and it shows a building getting wrecked and the wall falls out and Lenny is just sitting in this ramshackle, one room house. And he goes, please don't tell anyone how I live.
Yeah.
It's just the Sopranos does that. Like those are the windows that it gives you.
Yeah.
Please don't tell anyone how I live.
So at the after party, you've got, Tony congratulating Chris he says something along the lines of 100 years from now when we're all dead and gone, people are going to be watching this thing, which I mean I love the idea that he thinks that in 100 years that this is going to be like the world's not going to be so flooded with content. And
I mean, already
water.
80% of the movies made before 1950 are just completely lost to history or something like
they're
that.
They're just gone.
They're just gone. Yeah. No one thought to save those. They're like, oh shit.
Yeah. I mean,
we just stored them in the warehouse. What do you mean it burned down?
Yeah. Whoops. Yeah. And people are always you put it on the internet, the internet's forever. And I'm like, well, not forever. Society is not forever. You know what I mean? Everything's going to burn. But I do like Tony congratulating him and whatnot. And then we get kind of a glimpse into what's going on with the New York power vacuum that's going on ever since John.
So I was
going
to say, are we going to talk about Carmella and Tony? Like, I never would have expected that Tony would be the one of the couple who would understand the concept of fiction better than Carmella.
What you're referring to right now is the fact that
she's hung up. She sees this guy who's clearly based on Tony cheating on his wife with a very Adriana character.
Right.
And I like that his response was what do you mean? It's not Adriana. She's Asian.
Yeah.
He says she's Oriental.
Oriental specifically.
Yeah. Which is also perfect for Tony.
The boss, Tony.
What about him?
It was based on you.
Imitation to form of flattering.
You think that was flattering?
It was okay.
What about the girlfriend?
What girlfriend?
Sally Boy, the boss. He fucked the guy's fiance.
The thing with Adriana? I told you it never fucking happened.
Well, apparently your nephew feels otherwise.
It's a movie. It's fictional.
It's a revenge fantasy, Tony, which ends with the boss's head split open by a meat cleaver.
So there's a bit of a question here, whether Tony's playing dumb or if he legitimately is pretty, because Tony, his character is generally pretty thin skinned when it comes to himself and like, you know, how his underlings like think about him and whether they respect him and whatnot. And, and in this situation, Carmela is way more worried about, I mean, granted, she's mostly worried about the cheating, but she is, she's couching it in the terms, like she's worried about, that,
that Chrissy's going to want to kill Tony.
Yeah, Chrissy wants to whack Tony or something.
Yeah. It seemed like he just came to that realization in that moment. Like he hadn't actually considered that, which
I could,
seems a little
strange. I could interpret it either way, and I kind of like both of them. I like the idea that Tony was just having a good time watching a movie and not really like even thinking about himself. Or but I also like the idea that he's playing super dumb just to be like, what? You mean the girlfriend? Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Sometimes I just want to tell Carmela, like, you do know that when you say things like this, people can
people
die.
Exactly.
Right. like there's something there, because like for her, she's saying this because she's like, I don't like that I'm being humiliated. You know, that's like her thing. Is she's like,
that's really as far as she sees. Like she,
that's as far as she sees. Yeah.
She sort of cosplays as like the most, self-aware cast member, or like the one who is the most emotionally intelligent, but really she's almost always acting out of a place of, not wanting to be embarrassed, just like everybody else is.
Right. Yeah. And that's fine. It's just like, someone gonna die though. You know,
it is funny. Like, I feel like in being a parent, like I have sort of realized that like a good 80% of the shit that you tell your kids is being like, look, just don't fucking embarrass me. Like, don't make me look like a terrible parent, please.
Yeah.
Like, don't.
So I thought that the question we're asking was sort of settled with, I thought that Tony actually didn't get it.
Yeah.
And then it was the movie that he watched that, you know, ironically, it was the movie that JT encouraged him to watch that made him put it all together. Because otherwise they wouldn't have that scene of him watching it. That was kind of my thought. I'm not sure if he was playing dumb there.
I feel like this whole storyline is a bit ambiguous to me. Not in like a bad way, but like I don't 100% know what Tony was thinking for most of the storyline.
Well, after Tony gets into that, you know, bit of an argument with Carmela, he goes to the Bing and then he starts digging. He starts going like, he asks Syl, how did you like the movie? And he was like, you know, Danny Baldwin, pretty good.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily know that. I don't know that that was him not understanding the movie or just wanting to know if the other people interpreted it the same way that Carmela did, because
that's what he was digging for. That's
he's
why
he's digging
he was
to see, like, are you guys watching this and like thinking lesser of me? Like, should I be embarrassed about this movie? I think was the subtext there.
Right. Exactly. Like, should I be mad about this? Like, is this actually something, or is my, you know, wife just kind of,
because his personal instinct was that he wasn't mad about it. He was just fine with it. But now, now the other people.
Well, I think it comes down to the question of like, it's on some level, he appreciates the portrayal because he's like a bully. And
yeah, he's a tough guy.
He's a tough guy. And he actually says that at one point, right? He's like,
yeah, he goes, yeah, that Danny
Baldwin's a tough motherfucker. Like,
yeah, right.
So I think he like saw all the things that he wanted to see.
Right.
And then, like, Carmela kind of makes him realize that, like, oh, wait, like, yeah, you're a tough guy, but think about the perspective of the movie. It's,
yeah. Right. Yeah.
This
you're
is
the
a,
bad guy.
Yeah. This is a gesture of someone who hates you, is kind of what she's trying to say.
I would argue that it's a little bit of the illustration of what we always like to talk about, which is like, Tony, unfortunately, in the beginning, is the guy who has the Scarface poster in his dorm room and goes like, yeah, man, I love that movie. You know what it's all about? It's all about like he didn't break his balls or his word for anybody.
Yeah, he was
like,
just it was about this really cool guy.
Right.
Fucking gangster, dude.
And then
Carmela's like, Tone, it's about getting high in your own supply. You know, and then like, you know, and then he puts it together and
realizes
that Christopher Moltisanti is actually Oliver Stone, and then he's got to kill him before he makes JFK.
Yes, that's definitely it. But, you know, I mean,
well, before he makes Wall Street 2, at the very least.
Moving on. I do think he is like, he's not sure how to feel about it, which is why he's going around and, you know, kind of like digging. And then Carmela decides to also yell at Chrissy about this. And Chrissy is like, I think, being fairly patient with her because she's being kind of a jerk about it. Because at the end of the day, it's like, this is a zombie movie about a guy who has a undead person who has a meat cleaver for a hand. Like, the fact that she would be offended by this is a little
she's
much.
She's being a bad art friend.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. So Chris realizes that this is going to be a problem because if Carmela, like, I think Chris thought that no one would see the parallels. Like, I think Chris was a little bit like high on his
he
own
got
supply.
Into press tour mode and he was just like, anything is fair game in art. Like, he was thinking with his art brain and not his mafia brain. He realizes that a lot of people in the mafia are not good art friends.
Exactly. And he realizes that this is going to be a problem for him and he needs to remedy it. And the only way he knows how to remedy it is to get JT Dolan to
and hit him with another award.
Braining him with the award is like the funniest goddamn thing. I laughed so hard. Oh,
and just the fact that he used as an excuse, like the way that he talked, like the tone of voice he used, like, don't you fucking talk to me like that. Maybe you talk to your
like
agent.
I'm your agent.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because like JT does have a tendency to be a little pissy with a guy who literally, you know, could control his fate. And
he's always in press tour mode. Like JT Dolan lives his entire life talking about Cosmic Gumbo. So like
I have a clip.
I always felt like JT kind of doesn't actually realize that they could get him stuffed into a trunk.
Yeah, no, his whole life is like him using the real world as like elements of future fiction. Like the only reason he ever like started hanging out with Chrissy because he thought it was like cool that he was gonna, you know, hear some mob shit and be able to like incorporate that into
and
some
be able to
script.
Use it. Yeah, 100%. And of course that bites him in the ass like fucking crazy. And now he's forced to write this fucking movie and doesn't get the credit for it. That's another moment I love with JT just in the audience at the screening. And they're like thanking Tony Soprano instead of him. Like everyone gets like a thank you from Chrissy except for JT.
You could very much see the Sopranos writers getting their artistic frustrations out in this script where it's like, oh man, oh, the business side is always shitting all over creatives. They don't let us do anything.
And I have a clip of the wonderful Chrissy and JT scene.
You got to tell Tony that was your idea.
It wasn't my idea.
What are you, fucking stupid now? He probably thinks I put it in there to embarrass him.
Why did you put it in there?
It was an idea. I don't know. Who knows where they fucking come from? Isaac Newton invented gravity because some asshole hit him with an apple.
It's bad enough that I don't get credit for my own ideas. Now I'm supposed to take responsibility for some shit that's going to get me in trouble? Fuck that, man.
Humanitas Award? What's that?
Humanitas. From the Paulus brothers for writing themes of socially redeeming.
the just like for writing themes of socially redeeming, like that is the exact moment at which I want to brain someone with their award.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Just the amount of ego that goes into like being a screenwriter or a television writer who gets an award for like, not only did you write a movie and get paid a bunch, but also
you contributed to humanity.
You've done some socially redeeming just like hitting him in the middle of that is fucking beautiful.
Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. If you know me, you know there's only two things in this entire world I care about more than rewatching my favorite TV shows. It's gut health and former karate champion Chuck Norris. That's why I love Morning Kick. You're probably asking, what is Morning Kick? Well, I'll tell you. It's a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Look, I live in Los Angeles, all right? And this is a city defined by its culture of people drinking green drinks. Unlike the other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes good. It tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade. It's so good. And since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother and my body looks leaner. And I have energy all day. All day energy, which I need because I have a child and she's walking now, which means she's running now, which means I need energy. The thing I like most about Morning Kick is how easy it is to make. Just mix with water and stir. Simple. No blenders, no convection ovens, no turning your pantry into a science lab in order to make a SCOBY so you can brew your own probiotic drink. No. All you need to do is have some water and get yourself some Morning Kick, stir it in a glass, and baby, that digestion of yours, smooth. Smooth like silk. And you're gonna look good. And you're going to feel good. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today. All right, let's get back to the show. Summertime and the living is thirsty, at least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on earth, Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent. And it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say, this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the US, and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji water.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
So, JT... Yeah, he goes over to the Bing.
Yeah, JT's solution to this, I mean... He screenwritered it up, but boy, like that guy, you understand why he was, getting staffed on so many shows that he came up with a really excellent line of bullshit.
Yeah. And I think it's something that would have worked if not for one glaring flaw.
Love triangle, the cuckolding of Michael sleeping with the fiance, very similar to the Holden Holiday dynamic.
So the whole thing was your idea.
Apologies to Garson Kanin.
What happened to your head?
What? Oh, cabinet.
I love that so much because he wove this incredible tapestry of a lie that sounds legit.
Yeah.
Like this idea that he's like basing it off of this obscure movie and this obscure screenwriter. And the one lie he didn't think of is, why does it look like he just got brained by one of his awards?
With the Humanitas Award. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
The Humanitas Award.
And then he comes up with like the worst excuse of any battered person, which is like, right. I fell
down the stairs. And I think that's the moment for Tony where he realizes that this is bullshit. Like, he was put up to this, you know? And he, in the next scene, goes to watch, you know, that movie Born Yesterday. And I think maybe he's doing it just to check, just to see if this is like similar, if it's possible JT actually, you know, stole it from this. But I think mostly he's just depressed and watching a movie, as he usually does. You know, he just basically took that whole thing and he said, all right, well, now I have a new movie to watch, you know, so I can sit and be depressed and eat ice cream in front of the TV. Tony then goes to Melfi and does the thing that he does sometimes, which is upstage every actor on the show with one of the best scenes.
His dad, Dickie, was like my me to him.
A mentor.
A friend. A fucking guy you could look up to. And the hope is that you pass that shit down. The respect and the love. And all I did for this fucking kid, and he fucking hates me so much.
Is it possible that on some level you're reading into all this?
I've been coming here for years. I know too much about the subconscious now.
That was the Neo I know Kung Fu.
I'm actually mad that we watched The Many Saints of Newark in parts of the season, because there's a lot.
I know.
There's so much in the season that dovetails with The Many Saints of Newark, and not in a good way. I don't want to have that shitty mental picture of who Dickie Moltisanti is.
It was the first thing I thought of.
I don't want to have the shitty mental picture of what it looks like when Tony was hanging out with baby Christopher. Ugh.
Oh, cool, a hamburger. Like, the first thing I thought when he was like, you know, Dickie was like my me to him, and it's just him going in his room and going, you're eating comic books? Oh! It's just like, fuck, man, that movie did nothing to make you think that they in any way had any kind of relationship. But, hey, you know, that was the point of the movie. It's supposed to be bad because David Chase hates the fans.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you can. I don't know. It's partly that The Many Saints of Newark adds like a sour note to parts of the season, but also I feel like this season is really when it does start to get a little self-referential, and you see them doing like a little bit of pandering that that The Sopranos never did prior to this.
In what way?
I thought the whole coma, you know, the first part, the 6A, was such a fucking self-suck.
In this episode, like rewatching the coma episodes, they didn't bother me as much as they did the first time around. But in this episode, watching like there be a Geraldo segment on like the New Jersey mafia, and they have like the writer, they have like, I think it was like Matthew,
the wise guy to wise guys.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. My God.
And
Maro. Brilliant.
Exactly.
Like, when was the last time you saw like talking heads on TV discuss
that,
like the minutiae?
That was the most jarring thing to me, is like thinking about the mob being actually relevant in popular culture.
That's like it goes against
definitely the most jarring thing.
It goes against the entire idea of the show, which is like, this is the mafia after they've stopped being relevant in that way.
Though I did love the the professional psychologist being an amateur mob analyst.
Yes. Yeah.
An armchair mob analyst.
Right.
Professional psychologist, armchair mob analyst. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I knew this was happening. I knew this was coming.
And like, I didn't really understand what the tension was between him and the other guy. Like, they were having this like kind of passive aggressive argument. And I'm just like, I could think is like, maybe on the East Coast, this is like a news segment they would have where here's a little mafia update on who's in charge. But I'm like, no. I don't think
you find
so.
Out about, you only find out about this shit after the fact when he gets like murdered by a Q guy.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The idea that like people are following this.
Imagine like just like just like leaning on like Chinese guys to give you money, to like protection money, and working from there, like all the way up, like capo, like navigating all the politics. You're the boss, and then some guy who like thinks that you drink adrenochrome just shoots you in the chest in your driveway. I mean, because that's kind of what this episode's about, right?
I mean,
because
that was
it sucks. It sucks. Like, that was like Johnny Sacks. Like, dude, this sucks.
It's a thankless job.
It's a thankless job. Tony goes out to get the paper. He gets harassed by the FBI.
Yeah,
he's like, this fucking sucks.
I mean, that was
safe for years.
That was such a great moment. That was the real life version of Omar getting capped by a little kid in The Wire. Yeah, mm-hmm. This guy is pissed off, you know, probably thousands of people like doing crime. And when he finally gets shot, it's by some crazy asshole who is obsessed with a fucking web theory.
I was trying to do a citizen's arrest. Like, that is incredible. Yeah.
I also thought about The Wire with that because one of my favorite lines from that show is like, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And it's said like facetiously in that show, but like, you've got Tony, you've got Johnny Sack, and you got little Carmine all essentially expressing that sentiment.
Right.
At different points in the show.
Yeah. Like, Philly as well.
It fucking sucks. Yeah.
I mean, like, in terms of the mafia as like the American experiment in miniature, like, this has very much been playing out in politics. Like, the storyline of this episode is like, yeah, what kind of fucking idiot would want to be in charge of these other idiots? And then like, you look at like the political landscape and it was like, oh yeah, we got like Joe Biden and like Donald Trump, because we need someone who's like crazy and delusional enough of a like senile narcissist that would actually want this. And that's
to go
what
after
to,
this.
Yeah. Yeah.
The amount of like, I don't know, like psychosis and just like narcissism that it takes to even pursue this line of work. It's like, it's paralleled with politics. It's the same exact thing. And it is thankless. It's completely thankless. The only difference is like, at least with one of those jobs, you're actually like helping society. And I mean, the mafia.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you give out turkeys to the kids.
You're giving out turkeys. People need turkey. And also, who doesn't need protection? But yeah, it is interesting, the kind of like the thanklessness of the job for the top job for everyone. They all have this opinion in this episode, and no one seems to, you know, Philly doesn't want to take control of New York because he had this heart attack, and he's just he's seeing Johnny Sack not only in prison for the rest of his life, but in prison with probably a short life because of this cancer diagnosis. And
I mean, I remember when this episode aired. I mean, it's what, 25 years ago or no, 20 years ago at this point?
Yeah.
15 years ago.
15 years now.
It's not that bad. Yeah, 15 years ago. And I it's just like, I view it through such a different lens now. And I think to your point, it's like, what kind of fucking idiot wants to be in charge of all this? Like, that is awful. That sounds like the worst job in the world. Like, the thing I always think about is like one of my favorite Onion headlines ever was, you know, after Obama got elected, it was like, black man given nation's worst job.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the writing's so very clearly on the wall that this is a sinking ship, and then you're going to fight with other people over who gets to be captain of it. It's like, okay, go for it, dude.
You're going to risk your life. Your life.
So then who remains? Like, just like the most insane people who are only vying for the power because like solely for power's sake.
And the most fatalistic people too, because that's why this is why, like the same thing with cartels and whatnot. This is why after a while, after generations, psychopaths end up being all that's left, because the most psychopathic is going to be the one who's the most on top. They're the ones who are willing to get their hands dirty. And, you know, there's no more honor among thieves anymore.
Yeah. A few episodes prior, remember like Pontecorvo's like, hey, what do you think about getting out? You know,
yeah, right.
Like, no. And then he just hangs himself.
Right. Exactly.
Like, there's like this self-selection that takes place where, you're sort of necessarily only going to end up with very maladjusted people,
right,
to run this thing. And then of course, then all that trickles down and there's massive institutional decay because you've got a psychopath in charge calling the shots.
Yeah. And just a bunch of other psychos vying for that spot. And
real quick, I was going to say, I really do not want to let the opportunity go to point out Tony's line at the Cleaver party. Look, it's the family of early man. Oh, God. Just looking like a bunch of baboons smiling for the camera. Tony goes,
it's a family of early man.
Oh, yeah. Just the fucking widest, longest brows you've ever seen. Just nothing but frontal lobe.
We haven't talked about it yet, but I really, Sydney Pollack as the wife murdering doctor.
Yes.
Weird storyline, but God, like the introduction of that character where he's explaining crime is just, I mean, Sydney Pollack is always, he's one of those actors where he kind of always makes you happy when he shows up. But him just telling the story about murdering his wife because he was a cocaine addict and he thought she was cheating on him. Whew,
yeah,
that was such just a great story.
I've never been to prison, but I can totally see a white collar person in for a non-white collar crime.
Yes.
Admitting to what they did very much like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it just felt like that's again where you go back to the writing and it's like, holy shit, this is so good. I can totally see a guy. He's like a Richard Kimball who actually did it.
So what are you, the world's smartest orderly?
These days I am. I killed my wife. She was cheating on me with her chiropractor.
Jesus.
Came home one day, shot her four times, twice in the head. I killed her aunt too. I didn't know she was there, rolled. And the mailman. At that point, I had to fully commit.
Yeah, like the way he sets it up, you think he's gonna, they're gonna give him some justification for it. Like he caught them in bed together and was like, no, I just went home and killed her, and then her aunt was there, and I had to kill her too, and then the mailman, I had to kill him because, you know, why not? And it's just,
that's what I loved about it. Like, what was unsaid in it is that, it was not necessarily.
Yeah, it wasn't Andy Dufresne coming home and fucking, like, he's not wrongfully accused, nor was it a crime of, like, passion. It was more a calculated, like, I'm going to go.
He was just having a bad day, and he was thinking about it a lot.
He has enough distance to be, like, somewhat introspective, but not to the point that,
displays any like reticence about
or remorse or anything.
Yeah. And like, mostly, well, it was a fucked up thing that happened, you know?
And mostly he's using it to try to impress Johnny Sack.
Sure.
But what I love about this character of Dr. Feldman is that he is, I think, for the show, for the series, the culmination of the show that hates doctors. Because this is there's so many characters that, like, doctor characters on this show who are these like narcissists or just fucking like just dickheads or just completely.
There's not one doctor on the show that seems like a nice guy. There's either like there's this guy who's like kind of seems like a nice guy, but is like openly evil in his introduction.
Yeah, he's literally a murderer.
And there's some that are like moral and good, but they're like assholes. Like you don't they're not going to take mob money, but they are. Dickheads.
You have your Dr. Kennedy's, and you know you have even the doctor who he was arguing with, who went, you know, he was like, you
Rosen.
Should put. this show has had such a pointed critique of doctors the entire time, and to with the final season end with a literal like triple murdering doctor who gives Johnny Sack the wrong advice or gives him false hope. Like that is the perfect culmination of this weird critique that is shoved into the show.
The false
whatever
hope was
reason.
Kind of a gift though, wasn't it?
I mean, I guess
he lived a couple good days after
he got to smoke again.
Yeah,
he got to smoke it again. He got to tell some more stories.
Another storyline that we glossed right over because, you know, there's so many good things about this episode. But when Johnny Sack finds out he has stage 4 cancer and he's lamenting that he quit smoking like 2 weeks ago, he's like, yes. I quit smoking, I started working out like at least 15 days ago, and now this? Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, my favorite part is right after that, the Fed, who's driving him back to the fucking jail, to the prison, goes like, even so, it was the right move. Only a Fed could think like this guy's going to die in 3 months. This is a fucking like completely lost cause.
It was the right look. You may not get a thing out of it, but it was still good that you denied yourself joy.
That is the most Fed thing to say.
I was going to bring up that like the main kind of the A storyline in this episode is Johnny Sack dying.
Yeah.
We had not touched on it yet. And I really love Johnny Sack. I think it's really just about the writing, the acting, and the casting. Like he was just so good. Cause when you really think about it, Johnny Sack didn't do a lot in the show. Like,
right.
He was kind of a guy, like there was no big dramatic arcs that involved him really, but like, he was just such a good kind of like bit player, and he was such a good actor. He was so well written, like,
yeah,
you know, and I think it's a testament to the show that, like, you know, I was like, fuck man, Johnny Sack died. Like,
he's
not the hero. It's not nothing that he even particularly does it's all that special, but like,
yeah,
it's so good at building his character up over time to make him someone that you care about. And
yeah,
just,
it's not
like,
a plot driven
really
show that you care about, like the outline, like you care about that they have sketched this like such a round, fully fleshed out character like Johnny Sack.
Yeah.
He's like this weird neat freak who's kind of a prick, and he's, you know, it's like
he loves his wife despite her weight and her being ridiculed by people. Like he's like not a bad guy. And they actually mention in the scene where he's talking to his brother, he's like, how will I be remembered on the street? And they were like, generally you were liked. People thought you were good, except for people thought maybe you got, you know, became kind of trigger happy after Carmine died and you took over, you know. And that was true. It was like a thing. His character changed a little bit once he was, you know, kind of head of New York.
Yeah.
And that's, he did become kind of like a dick,
that's the heaviest the head that wears a crown scene. Right.
He's
I would like to see what other people did in that situation. He didn't say that, but
yeah. He's like, no, God forbid anyone else.
God forbid.
And, you know,
he's telling you, man, it sucks. Like,
yeah.
Everyone thinks they want to be the boss. And then when you're in charge, you gotta make these hard fucking decisions. Like, it sucks.
But it's
an
interesting
part of me. There was even a part of me that was sort of like, you know, I don't think this is what they meant, but it was part of me. It didn't escape me that, like, it sort of made me feel like at the same time, like, you know, Johnny Sack's obviously been enabled to have this incredible life because he's the boss in New York. And it kind of just reminded me of people who have like ridiculous amounts of money. Mm-hmm. Yet only seem to have time to post on the internet about how mean people are to them.
Yes.
100%. Like, I don't think that's what this episode is about, but it's kind of
Lloyd Blankfein. Like, there was a tweet today from the guy who like was running Goldman Sachs, who probably is just disgustingly, like, revoltingly rich.
Yeah.
And he said something like, you know, say what you will about Hitler, his soldiers never used chemical weapons during World War doing. It's like, man, you would have to try, like, you would have to get up pretty early in the morning to say something fucking dumber than that.
Yeah, there's one thing that the Nazis never did was use chemicals to say, but like, that's gas people to death.
Perfect example of like a guy who's like so rich and comfortable, and like that is what he spent his fucking day.
Yeah, doing. You don't need to kvetch. You're good. So Johnny Sack, he does get a few, you know, days of, I guess, relief, thinking maybe that he might live a little bit longer. Ginny Sack does not like that he's smoking and, you know, tells him about the power of positive thinking. And, I do love him saying, what about all these 6-year-olds dying of leukemia? What was that from? All their negative thinking, which I'm like, I love that. Of course, Dr. Feldman ends up being wrong, and Johnny Sack does die. And Ginny offers him a cigarette as he's dying, which I thought was kind of cute.
That was like legit touching.
It was
that. And then also, like, I had this thought too. So this came out in 2007.
Yeah.
A man in a drama on his deathbed calling out for his mother in the year 2007, and they found a way to make it poignant. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, that's like, that is the most like trite thing. And again, it's just like, what a brilliant job of writing, directing, acting, like, and all acting. Those things coming together that Johnny Sack is like calling for his mother on his deathbed. And I was like, damn, like it was.
Yeah.
Was,
the fact that it works. Yeah.
Yeah. It totally worked.
Yeah. The fact that it works is like, it's a testament to just how good the show is.
They know how to do the art.
It's a good show. This is what I keep telling people. I keep saying you should watch The Sopranos. It's good. But of course, this leaves kind
of. If only they would listen.
I know. Then someday they could listen to this podcast. You
should create a podcast about it.
This leads into kind of like some of the New York stuff that's going on. Real quick, basically, what's happening is two people are vying for the top spot now that Phil Leotardo has decided he's stepping back. You've got Jerry, the hairdo, Torchiano, and you've got Doc Santoro. And Jerry is at dinner with Syl, and he's telling him about a metaphor he has for Phil Leotardo. And I just have a quick clip of that.
Johnny goes away. It's Phil's turn in the driver's seat, and his heart gives out.
Right.
His heart.
I know. What?
It's a metaphor. He lost his balls, is what I'm saying.
Let's say it then. Walt fucking Whitman over here.
I do love that under that hairdo is a beautiful brain that learned a metaphor. And it's at that moment when, that's the last metaphor he's ever gonna utter, because at that moment,
that beautiful brain is soon spattered all over Sylvia.
Just all over the place. He gets capped by some of Doc Santoro's people. And this is sad for,
a hitman's uniform in Sopranos? I feel like every hitman was dressed like that in the show. Like anytime a hitman.
Yeah. That's like in New Jersey. I think that look with the hat and the hoodie and stuff, that's like, oh, I'm just a regular guy. And so that you're not scared of getting killed.
It's not even a hoodie. It's like a track jacket with the white.
It's a track jacket.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That's what it is. And, I mean, they probably get it like some sort of mafia hitman supply store. And he shoots him right in his hairdo and the chest and a bunch of other places too, and he dies and
face down in the eggplant parmesan.
I mean, dying in a fucking Italian restaurant for a mafioso has got to be that's like, if you were to ask any mafioso, would you be cool with that? They'd be like, it's like my version of dying, you know, like in the middle of fucking a fish or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I feel like...
In quicksand, you know?
That's right. I feel like the face and the food would be like the line that doesn't get crossed, where like, you know, ironically enough, Silvio was there, but I can see him being like, his face. It was in the chicken parmesan. Disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Silvio getting his face spattered with blood has probably for him like set him back, you know, in his like, I don't know, germophobia, probably, you know, a few therapy sessions, because he is not a fan of he's a cleanly guy. Yeah, so then Philly is depressed, and our second to last scene is Philly is at a remembrance for his dead brother, Billy, and he's explaining to a bunch of kids how he went from Leonardo to Leotardo. And I have a clip of that.
Who knows who is Leonardo da Vinci? Maddie?
Yeah, he wrote the Da Vinci Code.
No.
Another man wrote that, but it's a hideous, sacrilegious book.
He was a painter of the Mona Lisa.
Very good. He was not only a painter, he did medical drawings and he designed a tank for the army.
Wow.
Leonardo was a great Italian, and that was our name originally, Leonardo. But many years ago, when my grandpa came over from Sicily, they changed it at Ellis Island to Leotardo.
What did they do that for?
Because they're stupid, that's why. And jealous. They disrespected a proud Italian heritage and named us after a ballet costume. Marissa?
That's for modern. In ballet, you wear tutus.
It doesn't make a difference.
That's right, it doesn't.
Can we have cake now?
I feel bad for Philly at this point.
Well, my question was, why didn't any of the kids ask, like, hey, Grandpa, why don't you just change that back? You can go ahead and you can do that now, you know?
Well, it's too late. Well, you know.
The line after that I thought was so funny, because I have a very vivid memory of that scene. Mm-hmm. But of course, over the, you know, 25 or 20 or 15 years or whatever the fuck it's been, it's been distorted, because what I remember was that scene being a very serious scene with Philly, you know, lamenting about the name change and sort of implying like this, you know, emasculation, mm-hmm. being, you know, having her name replaced with this great man with, you know, a ballet outfit. And that's like kind of how I remembered it. And then the girl responds, well, it doesn't really matter. And he goes, yeah, you're right. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. He goes, you're right.
It's just stupid thing. Yeah. It really is, you know? And it's just such a funny thing in my head, because as like a 25-year-old, I was like, oh, that sucks, man. Yeah, he's a pussy because he's got like this tutu name. And then as a 40-year-old, I'm like, who the fuck cares?
Yeah, who cares, bro? But, yeah, it is. It's interesting, but it also kind of leads to the ending of this episode, which is kind of a ramp up. God bless you. It's kind of a ramp up to some action is going to be happening. And it's basically Phil Leotardo saying no more Mr. Nice Guy. And, you know, he's done kind of like not. He's done taking shit, and he's talking to Butchie, and we have this ending sequence with, like, this is another weird fucking choice of song by David Chase, like, just a very weird British song.
Yeah, boy, is he choose some weird songs.
Like, sometimes he's just, like, he's so off, and, like, we've had, in fact, you were on for the most, like, the previous most British song ever, Brendan, with the, you know, with the Kinks, and like they just like up the ante with an even more British song that is just like, it's so weird. And I have a clip of that.
Oh, good.
My family took shit from the Mitigans the minute we got off the boat.
Come on, fuck you talking about
Leotardo. That's my fucking legacy. No more Butchie. No more of this.
The bloody pies are bloody fags. The bloody kings are bloody rags. The bloody pies made out of bread.
The bloody queen is bloody dead.
My bloody teeth are bloody fucked.
A bloody lorry is a truck.
Bloody lays are bloody crisps.
Save you bacon, fish and chips.
Yeah.
The
bloody bars are bloody pop.
Erasers are bloody rubber.
Bloody chickens bloody boil.
Aluminium is foil.
The bloody gears are bloody daft.
Are you having a laugh?
The bloody strong are bloody fit.
David Baker fish and chips.
Public schools are bloody private.
The bloody trash is put to dust.
The bloody chimneys bloody sweet.
David Baker fish and chips.
It's just weird how British this song is.
That is the hottest grind track I've ever heard.
Bloody petrols, bloody gas.
The bloody arse, the bloody ass.
The bloody cops, the bloody Bobby.
Bob's your uncle, Bobby Jobby.
A bloody neck, a bloody tie.
The bloody towns all in Shire.
There's a queue and bloody check.
Baby, bigger fishy chief.
A bloody Z's, a bloody Z.
A bloody nuts, a bloody head.
The bloody water is water.
America's America.
Bloody jammies, bloody luck.
Bloody bloody's bloody fuck.
The bloody lines, a bloody kill.
The bloody loo is where you poo.
A fortnight's two bloody weeks.
A diving bacon fishy chin.
It's just a strange song, and I don't fully understand why it's in there, but I don't know, man. It just, they have weird choices in music. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, and the episode ends with, I don't know, the christening of the baby? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, they christen the hell out of that baby.
And Tony hugs Chris, but they're doing the thing where both of their eyes are like sociopath eyes, you know? So I don't think it was a real hug is what I'm saying. And that's the episode. Real quick. Do we have any favorite scenes, least favorite scenes, or scenes that we missed? Vince?
I really liked the, just AJ's increasingly contentious relationship with his girlfriend. I liked that dinner scene. We didn't talk about that dinner scene.
The line, you have a fight or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
So good.
I also liked when they're asking Meadow if she, like, what happened to that guy in your medical whatever class? And she's like, and she says, he's completely fixated on his OChem final.
Yeah.
I liked that.
There was so much color and wonderful vibrancy in just the short little interaction where, I forget who it is, but introduces, you know, the Baldwin brother and says he got a ticket on the Jersey Turnpike, and Tony goes like, I'll take care of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Doc, just like,
yeah.
Yeah. It was Doc. Yeah. And yeah. Just like playing that all out in my head was just such a joy thinking about a Baldwin brother getting a ticket on the Jersey Turnpike for a cracked windshield. Uh-huh. And then Tony having a connection somewhere in the, I don't know about my tri-state area jurisdictions, but, you know, our transit authority or something.
Right.
Who knows, right?
Who knows?
Having the connections and then him, like, you know, having that enable him to feel like, you know.
He has some power.
Boss. Yeah. To be like, I'll get that taken care of. Don't you worry about
it. Yeah,
right?
Don't
like,
you worry about that fix-it ticket, because it's absolutely just a fix-it.
Right, absolutely. So it's not Don Corleone being like, I'm going to take care of this for you. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah.
My daughter's wedding day. You know, he's just Tony's just taking care of like clerical bullshit for a Baldwin brother.
It's one step above.
This whole mind palace that you can create around that little interaction. It's just so beautiful.
It's one step above just taking a sledgehammer to a parking meter in order to get the coins out in Donnie Brasco. You know, they don't have the power they used to have, but they can still do these little things. And that's enough. That's enough for them.
Right.
A nice little life. I agree. I love the scene with AJ not knowing that he's in a fight with Blanca, and and that line that she has where Meadow is like, oh, if only I could meet someone normal, and she's like, I hear that, which I'm like, fuck,
right?
That is makes you wonder, what is she referring to?
What's your boyfriend's abnormal family's?
There,
yeah,
right there.
They ran in front of the in-laws. Damn, dude.
Yeah,
keeps it real.
Yeah, so that is Yeah, the real gangster of this episode, I don't know, stage 4 cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a gangster.
Yep.
And my favorite malapropism,
it's got to be. Many.
It's got to be, I think, the sacred and the propane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like you can't really fuck with that.
I mean, I got to say, I got to give a shout out to some fuck throws an apple at him and he comes up with a theory of gravity.
Yeah, yeah. That's, yeah.
You know, I felt like with that one, it was just like there was so much going on. Because it's kind of a malapropism, but it's also like a peek into Chris's worldview.
Yeah.
Where it's like an apple wouldn't just fall on his head. It would have to be propelled.
Yeah, it forces you to paint the picture in your mind of what he thinks the Isaac Newton story was, where he was just like hanging out and somebody fucking brained him with an apple, and then that's how he came up with the theory.
Right. Someone's like, it is my fucking tree.
Yeah. Yeah. To him, the discovery of gravity was an act of violence. Yeah. Like, yeah, violence is the only way to true discovery. Everyone knows that. The beginning of the universe was violent. It was a big bang. But it is a pretty great one. If I had to grade this episode, I would give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Tough one. I mean, like I said, good bridge episode. I'm gonna say it's a solid B+.
Okay, that's a surprise. Brendan, if you had to give this episode any grade, what would you give it?
B+, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just talked myself into a B+.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's a B+ episode of The Sopranos and an A+ episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Brendan, baby, yes. Thank you for coming on the show. I love you. And where can people find you? What's your address?
At my house, just chilling. Leave me alone.
All right. Don't go to his house, everyone. Thanks so much for hanging out with us and talking Sopranos. And you're coming to my wedding, right?
Yeah. I already RSVP'd.
You know, Vince, you have not RSVP'd.
Oh, sorry.
You know, that stands for RSV piracy.
RSV.
Dude, I'm gonna RSDP to this.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Oh shit.
Dude, double penetration. I got it. Hell yeah, dog. Make sure everyone online listening to this, please RSVP to my wedding. Just kidding. Patreon.com/Frogcast for all of the bonus episodes. Vince, the $8 tier gets you a shout out. This is very exciting, Brendan, for you. Vince reads the names and gives them all a mob nickname. That's what we do for $8.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, All right. So first is Eric Bogenschultz. We missed his last name last week. That was my bad. So we got to give him a mafia name.
Oh, he's a Bogan, is he? Yeah, we're going to call this guy Crocodile Dundee.
All right. Yeah. Crocodile Dundee.
Crocodile Dundee's nuts. Uh-huh.
All right, that works.
Yep. So these are Australian mobsters?
No, well, I just heard the name Bogan, and I just said I went with it. Look, you just go with your gut on a nickname. You cannot overthink it. That's the thing.
Yeah, don't make him overthink, because he's the one who's good at this. I can't do this for some reason. Next is Manil Arachachij.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to pronounce
it. I'm gonna call this guy Arachnophobia, because that's what it looks like. To me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Uh-huh. Next is
aren't gonna get a mob nickname.
next is Austin Krumpaski.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we call this guy the Polak. Is that allowed? Can we do that?
I think we can do that.
Mob nickname. That's, come on.
Yeah. That absolutely would be a real mob nickname. Next, $8 tier now, down from 300. Kenley Bidwell.
Haven't we already given?
Well, thank you, Kenley. We fucking love you. Whatever your name is still your name. All right. Next is Craig Turner.
Hey, Craig Turner. We call this guy Coach. Wasn't the guy who played Coach Turner something? Anyway, we're
He's
calling
Craig
this
Nelson.
Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, Craig. There we go.
How about,
there we go. He's Craig T. We're gonna call this guy Coach. I'm sticking with Coach. Sorry.
I mean, I don't know. Brendan seemed like he had one.
What was his name again?
Craig Turner.
Craig Turner and Hooch.
There we go. Yeah, right.
Zarella.
Next is Jack Zink.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm Jack Zink off just thinking about this guy right now. we call this guy Zilch. I don't know.
All right. Next, we got Michael Saldarriaga.
Mm-hmm. Noma.
What?
I don't know. His name reminds me of Nomar Garciaparra. Garciaparra? So
okay.
Call him Nomar.
All right. Got it. Max Quintanilla.
We're going to call this guy Teach because my high school Spanish teacher was Mr. Quintanilla. And yeah, that's good. Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Teach. Hey.
Next, we got four more. We got Jonathan Morse.
Oh, we call this guy dot dot dash.
That's pretty good.
I was gonna call him the horse.
You know that, right?
All right, Darren Bloomgren.
We call this guy Bloom County. Mm-hmm.
All right. That Swedish chef. I don't know. Is that Bloom? It feels Swedish.
We call him the Bloomkin. There we go.
The Bloomkin. Oh, there we go. All right. Next is Sebulba, which is definitely a Star Wars character who rode a pod racer.
Oh yeah. Okay. What else did he do?
That's it.
He helps us with the loans with the people that we know about.
Okay. So he's a space Jew. We call this guy the space Jew.
That was the whole implication of Sebulba, wasn't it?
No, Sebulba was the pod racer. He wasn't the little Armenian guy. I thought he was Armenian. He could be Jewish. He's probably Jewish. We're still calling Sebulba the space Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly is the wonderful Emma Van.
Hey, we call this girl Dutch because it's got to be Emma Van something, but we're just going to call her Dutch for short.
I was looking for a last part to it, but I couldn't find it anywhere. All I see is Emma Van. So she's Emma Van. We're calling her Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So those are all.
Or maybe Bugsy. Bugsy, you know, that was his real name, was Dutch. So I don't know.
All right.
You can that pick and choose. Too.
Both. Emma, yeah. You got both of those names. Patreon.com/Frogcast. For the $8 tier shout outs and all the other tiers and the bonus episodes, broadcast@gmail.com for all of your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Christopher returns, Johnny Zach learns, he's gonna pass away. Blanca starts being rude, has a shitty attitude. It tears AJ apart, it's ruining his Sunday dinner. Silvio and the hairdo, they eat some gabagool. Jerry gets shot right in his head. Doc wanted Jerry dead. Now there's gonna be a war. That's a spicy meatball. Season 6 VO2. Christopher made a film for you. And now it's wrapped and there's a screening of Chrissy's horror film called Cleaver. Boss of plot was based on him and Adriana. Boss of tells JT to lie, hits him right in the eye. JT shows up with his face bruised. Tony doesn't buy the ruse and then complains to Doc Melfi. Why does Christopher hate me? Season 6 BO2. Christopher made a fool of you. He's got a fault when playing you, screwing Adriana. Chrissy's horror, Phil Cleaver. Chrissy's horror, Chrissy's horror, Chrissy's horror, Phil Cleaver. Fight your dog, Jesus Christ, when you masturbate. What a vicious LA man, all up in that ass with that guy. Flap, 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 eat my butt and suck my ass. Fuck my butthole with your finger. Fuck my butthole, fuck my butthole. Fuck my butthole with your finger. I'm loving butts and busting nuts. I'll put my dick into your dick and balls. Fuck my butthole with your finger. Bite your da, bite your da, bite your da and suck my finger. Yes, you can suck my.
I don't know, man. That was fun.
The bloody pies are bloody fags.
The bloody king's a bloody rag.
The bloody pies made out of bread.
The bloody queen is bloody dead.
My bloody teeth are bloody fucked.
A bloody lorry is a truck.
Bloody lays are bloody crisps.
Save you bacon, fish and cheese.
Bloody bars are bloody pop.
Erasers are bloody rubber.
Bloody chickens, bloody boil.
Aluminium is foil.
The bloody gears are bloody daft.
Are you having a laugh?
The bloody strong are bloody fit.
David Baker fish and chips.
Public schools are bloody private.
The bloody trash is called the dustbin.
The bloody chimney's bloody sweep.
David Baker fish and chips.
Bloody petrol's bloody gas.
The bloody arse, the bloody ass.
The bloody cops, the bloody Bobby.
Bob's your uncle, Bobby Jobby.
A bloody neck, a bloody tie.
The bloody town's all in Shire.
There's a queue and bloody check.
Diving big and fishy chips.
A bloody Z's, a bloody Z.
A bloody nuts, a bloody head.
The bloody water is what huh.
America's America.
Bloody jammies, bloody luck.
Bloody bloody's bloody fuck.
The bloody lines, a bloody kill.
The bloody loo is where you poo.
A fortnight's 2 bloody weeks.
A diving big and fishy chips.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.